This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Reverend Dr. James Forbes spent 18 years as senior minister of the Riverside Church in New York City. When he was installed in 1989, he was the first African-American to lead Riverside. But his journey began in North Carolina. Dr. Forbes grew up in Raleigh, sharing a house on Bloodworth Street with his many brothers and sisters. In the 1960s, he pastored churches in Wilmington and Roxboro. And this weekend, he's returning to his home state for the regional conference of Bread for the World. It's a national organization fighting hunger through better government policies and programs. Dr. Forbes will deliver the conference's keynote address in Greensboro on Saturday. Right now, he joins us by phone from New York, where he is a distinguished professor at Union Theological Seminary and president of the Healing of the Nations Foundation. Reverend Dr. Forbes, welcome to the program. Good to talk with you.
And good to be with you, Frank.
Tell us about Bread for the World. What is it and what brings you to this conference?
Bread for the World takes us one step beyond simply giving a handout to a needy person. Bread for the World is organized to try to identify what policies in our national and in our state regions could make it possible for people to somehow be protected against what we call starvation and starvation wages. Bread for the World believes that policies in a democratic society should lead us to make sure. Now, we don't want to promise everything. Not everybody has to have a mansion or a yacht, but our fellow citizens need food to eat. What policies can help to make that more likely for most of our people?
Can you give us a preview of your keynote address?
In my address, I'm going to be actually taking a positive approach to the issue of hunger. So we're not going to be haranguing people, but in the Bible, there is a parable, which is the most famous parable of all, and that's the parable of the prodigal son, that this boy was in bad shape in a far-off country, having spent all. But all of a sudden, something happened to him to turn him around. What was it? Well, it was a vision in his head that said, "How many of my father's servants have bread enough and to spare?" This image of bread enough and to spare, he could see the workers sitting at table, passing the food, talking about their families and their hobbies and their hopes and their dreams. So I picked that image up to say, you know what? Most people would really give more attention and support towards food legislation as well as towards charitable giving if they knew how powerful it was that nourishment was available, and if they also understood in a more negative way how much social dysfunctionality comes when folks don't have food to eat, when fathers can't put bread on the table, or when schools try to give tests to kids that have not had tests, that have not had breakfast. So I will be attempting to say, those of us who want to make a difference in the world, it is unlikely that we will find a better way to approach it than to resolve that we're going to do everything we can to see that starvation will not take place in our beloved state or in our nation, and also begin to look forward to decreasing starvation around the world.
It's interesting when you look at your meditation on the parable of the prodigal son and you talk about that boy who went away. It's different than just having dad send him another check while he's still living in that foreign land. He actually has a vision, doesn't he? I mean, as you said that, as you were talking about your understanding of that parable, I thought, yeah, he had a vision, first of himself in that foreign land, better off than he would be at his father's place, and then when he was away, again, a vision of a better life, which I guess is the difference between policy and charity.
Yes.
Policy, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. You, and listen, I'm liking what you're saying about it. That I would say that what we really have that decided to do is to recognize that really, contrary to popular understanding, most folks are willing to work double jobs, triple jobs, but if their work does not produce wages sufficient to put bread on the table, then much of the human potential is lost for that person as well as for our society, which needs all of the strength of our people to be as productive as we ought to be. So what we've got to do is to say, look, it's wonderful that we are one of the most charitable nations in the world, and I hope that that will continue. But let's take it one step further. What about examining all of our policies and coming to know more clearly what is it in our system that conspires against improving the nutritional outcomes for our children and our families? And of course, since I'm coming back to North Carolina, that's my beloved state. I love my North Carolina. Often in statistics, we are a cut below national averages in regards to how well we provide the basic subsistence of life. And I think my image of my state is that we kind of like, we were first in liberty, our license plates used to say. Let's also seek to be on the growing edge of the elimination of starvation and providing the best opportunity for people to have a decent living as they go forth to jobs that become available to them.
You've had quite a career as an advocate for human rights at all levels, and it did begin here in North Carolina. I'm wondering what it was like around that family dinner table in Raleigh. Was that what spawned in you this interest and this compassion that you've carried throughout your entire career?
Well, when you mentioned that table, back on Bloodworth Street in Raleigh, North Carolina, we had eight kids around that table along with Mama and Papa, but our parents were always reaching out to people who did not have. So quite frequently, we had to double up the spaces so that some child or some visitor could be at our table. Very rarely just us. So sometimes Mom would look around the table, and if she saw that maybe she hadn't counted right, she began a ritual that would say, are all the children in? And if somebody happened not to be present, we were required to prepare. We used to say fix a plate. We were required to fix a plate for the one who was not there, put it in the oven before we could serve our own plates and say our grace and begin to eat. Something about the spirit of caring for others became probably a family heirloom for us, the legacy of care, so that all eight of my siblings finally involved themselves in helping vocations. That was where that got started. So whatever I'm doing, it's kind of like it's only natural that I must show concern about those who are struggling just to get subsistence necessities.
Well, that vocation took you to Riverside Church, a renowned church in New York City, where you became pastor, a church where Martin Luther King made perhaps the most controversial speech of his career. And I suppose if we're talking about the systems and structures in support of injustice, that was the speech that did it. Why he was opposed to the Vietnam War, where he pointed to the twin pillars, the triple pillars of violence, racism, and imperialism, and saw that it was the structure and our whole standard of living depended on those things. It was a controversial and a difficult speech for us all, wasn't it?
It certainly was for him, because people thought of King primarily as a civil rights leader concerned about integration and all of that. But King was a moral leader, and he discerned that the monies we were investing overseas, he said 8,000 miles away, that was taking away first from the infrastructure, but also from the needs of citizens in our country. And he pressed us to recognize that if we are not engaged in war against those triplets that you mentioned, race, materialism, and militarism, then we will not be the great nation that seeks to fulfill the American dream. He got in a lot of trouble there, but I think history has somehow validated his challenge to us. And we all recognize that even the war in Iraq and in Afghanistan, There is a relationship between those wars and the war even against terror, certainly a very important aspect of our security as a nation. But those wars are directly related to the economic crises we have been through in the last decade or so. So, Dr. King laid down the law, if you care not for the least amongst us, you will not achieve the highest standards that's available for an industrialized nation.
Dr. Forbes, thank you so much. Safe travels. Looking forward to your talk.
Looking forward to being in. How's the weather down there?
It is beautiful. You got to get here. The trees are in blossom. It is utterly gorgeous.
Looking forward to it.
The Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Senior Minister Emeritus at Riverside Church in New York, Professor at Union Theological Seminary, going to be in Greensboro this Saturday at the Regional Conference of Bread for the World. Reverend Forbes has been with us, and I thank him so much for joining us. Coming up, 3 years after the Haiti earthquake, what international aid has accomplished and what it hasn't, and why. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.